Well, I think what's in my heart the biggest sitting here with all of you and spending the day here is to thank you. I thank you very much for doing the retreat, for being here. I appreciate it so much. And I think that thanks feels so strong because I put so much value in this practice we're doing and value in doing it in the kind of continuity and wholeheartedness that we do it on retreat. We often can't do in daily life. And I remain in awe of the potential or the efficacy of the Dharma, of the practice, of the mindfulness, of the awareness that we bring. That something so simple as awareness can open so much, heal so much, release so much, free so much, bring so much goodness into this world is a phenomenal thing. And so I kind of have a tremendous reverence and awe for this practice we have of bringing awareness into, make awareness come alive for us or be present here in our lived life. And this is a big part of what we're doing, is that we're discovering the potential, the possibility of what happens when we are in the present moment with clear awareness. And we spend a lot of time doing other things. It's a little bit funny that what we're doing here is availing ourselves of what's always here. Like, it's always with us, the present moment. Like, where else are you going to be? But we never avail ourselves of it. We really never really allow ourselves to really plumb the depths of it or the fullness of it, or really allow that present moment, the meeting of the present moment and awareness, to do the rich work that is possible. And sometimes we do other rich work. Like, we might spend a lot, I don't know if it's rich, poor work, rich work, I don't know what, amazing work. Planning the future, and there's future thinking, and it's kind of mostly just imagination. We're using our imagination about the future and planning things, and that has its time and place to do. You had to imagine and plan coming here to this retreat, and then sometimes you might have spent a lot of time remembering the past and living in your memories. And what they say, people who study memories say that memory is partly creative, and we're kind of recreating our past when we kind of remember. And apparently, people are not very accurate in remembering the past. It's kind of embarrassing or humbling or something. I mean, especially if we live in the past a lot, and then we kind of, so it makes some sense then that we're spending time, if we're creating it to begin with, not begin with, to some degree we're creating it, then let's see if we can create it better. And reviewing it and trying to come up with a new understanding of the past. There's a time for that. But if we're only living in those dimensions, or living in fantasy, then we don't avail ourselves of this moment. And there's dimensions to discover or to open up to drop into, if we're really just kind of entering and exploring this present moment. And what we mean by exploring here in mindfulness practice is not that you kind of go around the IRC and look at every screw and doorknob and to explore the present moment, all the details like that. But what we're talking about is that the many dimensions of awareness, of our ability to have attention. And attention has the characteristic of always being in the present moment. I don't think we can pay attention or be aware of the past or the future. We can think about it, we can remember it, but we're not exactly using our attentional capacities for that. We're using our memory capacities, our imaginary capacities, our predictive capacities. And so what we're doing here is we're discovering, exploring what it's like to have attention and to have that attention wake up in the only place where it can wake up, the present moment. And so it isn't like the present moment is the be-all and end-all, and that's what just happy to be in the present moment. If you're only in the present moment forever, from here on, you're probably ready to move into my mother's memory care home. She is very much in the present moment. It's phenomenal. And how little she can, you know, manage on her own. But in the present, she's fantastic. She's in a good mood, usually, and you can talk about the weather and how nice it is, and then you can talk about the weather and how nice it is, and about the weather, how nice it is. And for her, every time it's new. Have I told you how nice the weather is? So this idea of being in the present moment is valuable for us, but we don't want to make it too much out of it. What we're doing is we're taking the present moment, whatever that is, and we're seeing what the meeting is of the present moment and our awareness. The present moment and our capacity for attention in the present moment. And it turns out that we have many attentional capacities. And you look at the Buddha's teachings in this text that Andrea mentioned last night, the discourse, classically in English it's called the Discourse on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. In the last 10-15 years, there's a movement towards translating it as the four establishments of mindfulness, or as I like to do it, like Andrea likes, to translate sati as awareness, the four establishments of awareness, the four ways of establishing awareness. It's a very different feeling, establishing awareness. How do you establish awareness? So in this text, the Buddha provides a whole bunch of exercises, the purpose of which is to establish awareness. Now some of you, and probably all of you, have had some moments in your life, maybe accidental or maybe something dramatic happened, that something happened that just everything locked you and locked, brought you into the present moment in a clear, complete way. And when the event was over, it's like you're still there, present, and wow. That, you know, maybe it kind of cleared things out. It might have been an unfortunate thing, like a near accident in a car, and like then you know you were just minding your own business, thinking about some wonderful prediction about what you're going to do tomorrow or something, and suddenly there's a near accident, and like when you finish, like you're like really in the present moment. Wow, it's clear. Or maybe it's a time in nature, or maybe it's waking up from a really one of the best naps you ever had, and it's like now it's palpable. The present moment, the clarity, the knowing. And so what we're doing is we're trying to awaken that capacity for clear awareness, awakening that capacity for establishing that kind of attention in the best possible way, not because it's a danger got our attention, but we're kind of awakening this natural capacity so it's stabilized. And we're able to in a stable way stay in the present moment. The mind doesn't wander off. So how do we establish and stabilize the awareness? And the Buddha teaches in this there are 13 exercises for doing this. And what's fascinating to me, and this is a kind of big surprise many years ago, I wanted to see what the Buddha had to say about mindfulness. And so I thought I'd go to this famous text. Back then it was called the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. And it's like mindfulness is the big deal, right? So I'm going to see what he says about it. So I started going through this text, and he says almost nothing about mindfulness. I said, wait a minute. This is the mindfulness text, and it's not there. What's going on? And what's going on is that the text is organized where the Buddha talks about we want to the beginning and end of it, of the journey of the practice, is it begins with establishing awareness and it ends with having another thing that's called sati, but it has a prefix, pati sati, which I translate as a lucid awareness, or maybe it's better to translate as clear awareness. And there's a journey of establishing some modicum of awareness and then using that capacity to be aware in such a way that awareness becomes more stable, more clear, more available, more like we're endowed with it. It's second nature that's operating, as opposed to a practice that we're doing. In fact, the Buddha never talked about mindfulness as a practice that you do. The sati, mindfulness, is something that you are more than something you do. It's fascinating. And you can think of awareness being that way, that it's more something you are than something you do. And one exercise I think is kind of fun, maybe you'll allow me to do it with you, is if you're all paying attention to these instructions, classes, you have to pay really careful attention, and now stop being aware, please. Just cut it out. You've done enough of it now. Give it a break. Come on. Can you do it faster? Probably, unless you kind of immediately went into some glorious fantasy that took you away from this room, you can't just stop being aware. Even if you had a wonderful fantasy, then I started talking again, and you noticed, and you're being aware. Awareness is happening all the time. And so we're taking this, so we're already endowed with it. It's already who we are. And we're making that a bigger, bigger piece of who we are. So it becomes a constant presence, a constant occurrence, rather than something we tap into from time to time. So the way, but these 13 exercises don't say anything about sati, about mindfulness. So there's 13 exercises to do to bring about this strong mindfulness, this strong sati. So what's interesting to look at is, like, I'm not going to go through all of them, but to look at some of the verbs, the actions that we're instructed to do. And these actions are, for the most part, are using different capacities of attention. We have many attentional capacities. And learning, even just learning that we have different ways to be attentive, then we can use them differently at different times, depending on what's most useful to keep us anchored or rooted in the present moment. So it begins, the text, before the first exercise, it simply says, establish awareness. That's the first instruction. What does that mean, you know? So I've asked people, how can you establish awareness? And the most common answer I've gotten from people is you allow for it. So it's not like you have to bring, you know, a hammer and nail it in and get it really well established. You have to allow for it. So you allow for awareness, but you do it in a way where the conditions are such that you're more likely to stay aware. And so the instructions are, I think in the old days, most people sat cross-legged. They didn't have chairs, apparently, very much. And so sit cross-legged under a tree and sit upright. And I think this idea of uprightness I interpret to be not necessarily upright, so Andrea can lie down and other people. I think of it as metaphorically for taking an intentional posture to that somehow the intentional posture is one that's going to be to hold or support being aware. I remember once that I sat at a 3-month retreat at IMS, and I've been sitting for many months, a couple of months by that time, And I thought, it's probably a good idea to not always sit in the same posture. They had a little lounge with a couch. So I'll just sit on the couch for one sitting. And it was kind of a cozy couch, and I kind of collapsed into it in a nice couch potato way. And it was the fastest meditation of the 3 months. It was over kind of like as soon as it started. I just felt sound asleep. So, the idea, there's some postures that support being attentive and some that don't. And so even laying down, I love watching Andrea lay down her meditation because I really feel that she is in a posture she's going to be attentive. And, I feel like I can feel that kind of a healthy, relaxed intentness in it. So there's many ways of doing it, but so each person's job is to sit, do the upright thing, whatever that is your way. So that's how it begins. And then I'm not going to give you the full exercises, but I'll tell you the kind of attention that kind of in the sequence in which they appear that the text talks about. The first thing it says is to recognize what's happening. Or to know what's happening. I like the word recognize because it's so simple. To understand or to know lends itself to try to understand the complexity, where did this come from, why is this happening. But recognition is a very simple human capacity to know, it usually involves a label, or a simple concept. So, we say here at IRC, we say that this is a bell. So recognize this is the bell. If I ask one of you to bring the bell downstairs for some reason, you don't come up here and grab the clock. There's a very simple recognition of which is the bell and which is the clock. So this can seem kind of a silly thing to bring up, but to be in the present moment, to recognize what's happening in the present moment, you have to be in the present moment. You have to have some attention here. And there's a way of doing recognition that is like an anchor to the present or a encouragement to be in the present. And so I actually will do what's called mental noting, but all kinds of fun way to interesting ways of doing it. And with recognition, it's mostly a function of recognition. It's using recognition, heightening the recognition so that it heightens our capacity to be present with awareness, with attention. So I might say, to use the example of the bell, I might recognize there's a bell. I might say seeing, or I might say bell, depending. If I say bell, then it's like dropping a pebble in a pond. And then I just kind of open my awareness up, my attention up, to feel the repercussions of having said that. What do I feel? What's aware of? What follows in the wake of saying bell? I don't rush off to notice the next thing. And so, bell. I feel the weight, I feel the coolness, the smoothness against my hand. So that's what comes in the wake of it. Or I might say seeing, which is what I'm doing, seeing. When I say seeing, I feel a little tiredness in my eyes. I feel a little bit my eyes are kind of relaxed back in the sockets. Seeing. And I see that there's a reflection of light and a sharpness and a darkness. It just, like that. That's what I see. That's when I say seeing. And it makes space. What happens when I have that moment of recognition? If you recognize what's happening in the present moment, and you feel like, I'm done with that, let's go on to the next thing. I call it the checklist approach to mindfulness, which I used to do when I was new to all this. I would, I was noting the exhale and inhale, and back then I would say in and out, you did rising and falling. And so the inhale would begin, and I do rising of the belly, and I would do it right at the beginning of the inhale, did that, and then I had all this free time to think about things for the rest of the inhale. And then the outhale began, and falling, check. That's not going to get you very far. That doesn't really get the awareness awoken. But to say something like in as you breathe in, and that in is just like, okay, what am I aware of in the wake of that? What arrives? What arises in awareness? What am I receptive to then in that inhale? So it's like a little pebble. Okay, oh. So that's what the inhale is like. Out, maybe if you use that note. For the exhale, oh, that's what happens with the exhale. Like, but it's not to think or analyze, but it's like feel it. Because the next exercise, that verb or activity, after you know it, recognize it, the Buddha talks about a word that can mean to experience or to feel. And that's something that has to do with sensations in your body. So we have a sensate ability as well. So we can know in the mind, we can recognize, which is kind of a mental capacity. And then we have the capacity to, you know, I can touch my thigh and I can feel two things. It's kind of fun when you touch yourself this way, because I can feel pressure against my thigh and I can feel pressure against my hand. So which one do I pay attention to? The thigh's experience or my hand's experience? And or can I separate them, or they happen together? What goes on there? So that's a little bit fun, but right now I feel hot. And I feel the hot in my arms sitting here, a little bit of heat. And so the recognition of hot is the first exercise, recognition. So I can say hot, and then I feel it. And the feeling of it is the sensory experiencing of it. So the Buddha says, after you feel your breathing, after you recognize yourself breathing, at some point, also allow yourself to experience or feel the sensory quality of the whole body. And this way, to have the sensations of the sense endings, your sense organs of your body, have them experience and feel, is also a present moment attentional capacity. And so some people get very much in the present moment when they have a very nice sense experience or a very bad sense experience. Both of them can put you right in the present moment and you get it got your attention. And here you are, you're here. So to feel and sense, and the idea of sensing is also part of this opening or receptivity of awareness that can happen. It's, okay, let me feel this. When it's nice, then we might indulge in it, which is not so helpful for cultivating clear awareness. And it's unpleasant, we might react against it and shut down, which is also not helpful for developing clear awareness. How do we use our capacity for sensing and experiencing feeling that neither leans towards something or pulls away, neither closes down or grabs on? So this is part of what we're experimenting with and learning how to use our sensory capacity for awareness, for attention, to use it in a way that helps us to be established in awareness, to be stabilized here. And then it goes on and talks about having clear comprehension. So what is clear comprehension? I'm not sure what the Buddha meant, but how I understand it, that's different than recognition. It involves a little bit bigger sphere of understanding of something. So I might recognize that I'm sitting here minding my own business, meditating with my breathing, and I start thinking about, what should I have as a snack when the Dharma talks, when the meditation's over. And I start, thinking about the snack. And I let go of it, and I think about a snack. And I let go of it, I think about a snack. And after a while, each time I noticed, you know, snack thinking. snack thinking. But it keeps coming back. At some point, there's a little better comprehension. I understand something more. You know, I'm doing this a lot, thinking about snack. Gil, this is like a little bit of waste of your time to think about snack. You've kind of mastered the technique of thinking about snack. You've done this well, thank you, congratulations. And it's enough. I have more important things to do here. There's some level of gravitas or inspiration or priority of what's important that can arise when you realize at some point, you know, I don't want to spend my life thinking about snacks. And so something gets established. Okay, I'm here. I'm going to be a little bit more serious or a little bit more engaged or a little bit more, you know, maybe establish is a good word. Okay, I'm going to not just simply let go of it, but I'm going to return here and really kind of get rooted. Yeah, I'm going to be here. I have more important things to do about snacks. So clear comprehension is maybe not that complicated, as I said, but there's understanding a little bit more of the process, what's happening, what's important, where do you want to be, how do you use your attention. And that also begins to establish this awareness, stabilize it here. And then the Buddha talked about we have intentional capacity to feel. And it's different than what I was experiencing before. This is feeling the pleasant and unpleasantness of experience. And this is a deep thing, which is kind of not the same as sensations, which is closer to just physical. The feeling of pleasure and discomfort is partly evaluative. It's partly related to some degree with liking and not liking, or approving or disapproving, or kind of something. It belongs to the mind, rather than just to the sensations belong to the body. So if I feel warm, that's a sensory physical experience. If I feel the warmth as pleasant or unpleasant, that goes through the filter of what my mind kind of interprets it or does to it. And it could be that I interpret it by, oh, that there's a warm feeling. This is so nice because I grew up in cold climates, and this is the kind of warm that I have when I come in from the cold, and it's so nice to be in the warm, dry kind of place. And so it feels pleasant. Or I feel warm and I say, oh, this means that maybe I am feeling embarrassed talking about this in front of all these good people. And that reminds me of whenever I'm embarrassed, this heat comes on. This is really unpleasant. So depending on the interpretive scheme, we have this pleasant, unpleasant. So the feeling of that is a different kind of feeling than experiencing the physical sensations. So that's another thing that happens in the present moment. The Buddha did not say, do that. What he said is that when you do that, when you have these pleasant and unpleasant sensations that come up, recognize it. Oh, there's pleasant. There's unpleasant. And the value of that recognition there is that it protects us a little bit from getting reactive to the pleasant and unpleasant. Human beings love pleasant and unpleasant, or hate, you know, they have this love-hate relationship to some degree with pleasant and unpleasant. And we get pulled into their world. And when we do that, we're not establishing present moment awareness. So the Buddha talked about just know, just recognize. As we go along doing this practice, recognizing, sensing, having clear comprehension, feeling and knowing the feelings we have, at some point, the awareness gets established well enough that he has another attentional capacity that he calls on. And this is observing. And to watch and observe is used, the idea of seeing is used in many wisdom traditions in the world for a certain kind of highly developed way of being wise and free in this world. And I think the reason why that the looking faculty is used kind of metaphorically is that because you're looking with the mind's eye, not the eye's ear. It's a way of perceiving. Looking is a way of perceiving where the eyes themselves don't interfere with what it sees. So I see the bell. I might like this bell. I might hate this bell. I might wonder if I can use it for something else besides having a bell. Maybe it looks like a spittoon, you know, and then I have a whole different relationship to it. And so I can do all this stuff with it. But I can't actually, you know, my eyes doesn't actually change what I see. My relationship to it might change. My interpretation of it might change. But if I don't interpret, don't get entangled in it, I have the ability just to see it. And the example for seeing like this that I love is that of, maybe it has to do with peculiar to me, but is sitting on a riverbank and watching a river go by. And not spacing out, but just watching the ripples, the little wavelets, watching the ducks in the water float by, and the little boats go by, just watching. And there's something about the movement of water that I find very engaging, very, very pulls me into it. And I find myself very much in the present moment. And I kind of forget my worries and my cares, and I'm just here. And it's kind of I feel refreshed sometimes after spending some time watching a river go by and just sort of watch the water go. So this watching, just observing without interfering, without judging, without getting complicated by it, just the ability to perceive and let what's being perceived, to leave it radically alone, and be clear and to see clearly, to have the attention, the perception clear and stable, so there's a continuity of observation, continuity of perceiving that happens. So we don't get sidetracked by discursive thoughts and whatever we do. So observing, the Buddha talks about, and he talks about in this text, in the introduction, the beginning of this definition part of this text, he talks about observing four areas of our life. And I love this little teaching, because it's kind of helping us, you know, this world we live in is so, there's so many different complicated things. It's a chaos, the whole show. And he's kind of helping us understand, here are four areas of our life that can make it simple for you, that if you want to really establish clear awareness, awareness that leads to awakening, kind of root yourself, base yourself in these areas. Observe these areas. Observe your body. Observe your feeling tones, your mind states, and then some of the mental processes that go on, particular mental processes. And so he's talking about... kind of as you establish awareness and able to settle back and just allow things to be received in awareness and perception, receive your body. And the way it words it is, receive the body in the body, or body as body, I think Andrea said yesterday. Either way, it meant to just very simply experience your body in its own terms, as it shows itself to you, not through your judgments of your body. I can look at my hand, And I can decide my hands is too much this, too little that, too chubby, too thin, fingers too long, too short. My fingernails are just not quite right. They're perfect. And my hand doesn't really care about all those ideas. The hand by itself is quite happy or content. It's just a hand. And then the mind is doing all this kind of concocting about ideas of what hands should be or shouldn't be, or right hands and wrong hands, and comparing my hand with other hands. And the meanwhile, the hand is just kind of like hanging out and taking care of itself. And if you feel the hand, if you do the experience the hand in and of itself, unless it hurts or something, the hand is just hand sensations, independent of if it's too long or too short or whatever, stubby or something. It's just hand. And so cultivate this capacity to perceive and feel and find that this awareness is getting established more and more just here. So feeling the body in and of itself, experiencing feeling tones, pleasant and unpleasant, in and of themselves, without adding the complications of preferences and reaction purposes and this meaning to it. If it's unpleasant sensations, this means I failed. If I'm a good Buddhist meditator, I should be sitting on cloud nine, blissed out, and that's what good meditation is. Rather than, just unpleasant. Experience unpleasant as unpleasant, and don't make it any more or less. Mind states as mind states. We have all these mind states. And he doesn't say, take it as a mind state to judge yourself by that state of mind. He just says, if you have a greedy mind state, notice a greedy mind state. That simple. It's very freeing. If you have a wonderfully expansive mind state, he doesn't say celebrate. He says, just know it as an expansive mind state. So just keep it so simple. And what we're looking for in this mindfulness practice always is coming to a simple awareness. If it's not simple, it's probably not awareness. And so as we keep going in this practice, sometimes we'll be using recognition to keep us here. Sometimes we use sensing the experience. Sometimes we use clear comprehension that's useful to keep us here. Very simple understandings to help us stay present where it's important to be with our attention. Sometimes we're closer to the feeling tones of things that we see and know those. Just to be complete, he also talks about visualization, believe it or not. Using the imagination sometimes to help us be in the present moment. Maybe later in the retreat I can talk more about that. But how that helps rather than hinders. Because mostly we think that imagination and visualization is no part of mindfulness practice. And for good reason that we kind of shy away from it. But there is, it actually mentioned in the text as a way of helping to establish mindfulness. And I love it because it just kind of opens up the field a little bit of things that have often been denied in our tradition. And so we have these, and doing this process, I like to think of it as that we're kind of waking up all these wonderful attentional capacities we have that we probably are activated throughout the day anyway, but allowing them kind of to come to a kind of fullness, a kind of integration with each other, a kind of wholeness. In a sense, we become more and more whole through this practice. So all these different areas that we have attention, all the sense endings in our body kind of become more present. Our capacity for knowing what's happening in the present moment, we know more things because we're here. We comprehend more things. And we begin to perceive from this wonderful capacity to observe, just kind of settle back and just kind of see what's going on in our mind, see what's going on in our body, see what's going on in the world around us, just kind of allowing it, everything to be itself. Allowing everything to be itself. So, as you know, I think you know that one of the hallmarks of the goal, one of the characteristics of the goal of this practice we do, is freedom, liberation. And most people interpret that someday I'll be liberated. It's all about me getting liberated. Another way of understanding it is that you don't get liberated, but you liberate everything else from yourself. So when you observe something, it's whatever you observe, it's liberated from your judgments and your desires, your agendas. You see it. You just allow it to be. I see the bell, it's just a bell. If I see an unfortunate thought in my mind, it's just an unfortunate thought. No. I liberate my thought from my condemnations or my anger or my embarrassment or my ways I look at it. Oh, this means that I'm a bad person because I had that thought. No, I've liberated the thought from all this stuff. It's just a thought that floats by. It'll be over soon enough. So we learn to be established in awareness, use these attentional capacities to discover what it's like to be in the present moment in a relaxed, full, open way with stability. The attention is stabilized in the present moment, or the attention flows in the present moment. The attention doesn't wander away from the present moment here. As this continues, we come to kind of the higher reaches, or the kind of more developed place of this sati, a mindfulness, where it's pati sati, and one's a prefix, but the difference between the two is that one starts with P and the other starts with S. Pati sati, and pati I translate it as either as lucid or clear. Where awareness becomes really clear. And sometimes if someone asks me, what is awareness? I'll say, oh, it's clarity. It's just simply clarity. There's a kind of clarity to it, to what's being experienced. Sometimes I like the word simplicity. What's awareness? Simplicity. But by that I mean a simple clarity. The metaphor, the analogy the Buddha uses for this level of clarity and awareness is a lake where the water is completely clear. And the person standing on the shore of the lake can see right through the water to the fish that are swimming through it and the pebbles and the shells on the bottom. And so the clarity of the mindfulness is so clear and so simple and so broad and so open. And it sees all the details of our life. Nothing is rejected. Nothing's rejected. All the details of everything can be there. But it's there in this beautiful, fluid, soft clarity of sati. Of lucid awareness. And all along the way in doing this, it's not a linear process. It's a process by which all along the way we discover so many of the ways that we're not able to do it. That's the kind of the game. Rather than being discouraged that you can't do what I talked about today, we're doing this, we're trying to do this, and we'll discover all the ways we can't do it because our mind wanders off, we're thinking about the past and the future, we're reacting, we're falling asleep, we're too restless, all kinds of things, you know, all kinds of things are happening. This is not a mistake that you are dealing with what makes it difficult for you to be present. It's not a mistake. This is what we're working with. This is how we grow up. This is how we mature in this practice, is to really see those things. Learn to recognize those. Simple recognition. Learn to not just recognize them, but to open and feel more deeply, what is this that's happening? To have some wiser understanding about it. You might need to have some clear comprehension that thinking about snacks all the time is not the way to be on retreat. It might take a while for that wisdom to evolve and develop, but at some point I have to keep showing up for these snack thoughts until I can, okay, I see that this is not really useful. And then developing the ability eventually of observing, just observing and seeing. And that's a funny, it's a really kind of funny, or it's kind of inspiring or humorous sometimes, or the capacity to both observe with clarity the mind doing something which normally would take you away and be difficult. But you now you've learned how to let difficult thoughts, difficult feelings, difficult things arise without getting entangled in them. And so you recognize, oh, that's a difficult thought, that's a difficult feeling, that's a difficult emotion. But instead of being influenced or caught by it, I can just observe it. Wow. There's both the difficulty and the beauty of observation, both a difficulty and a kind of freedom that just knows it, doesn't get involved, keeps it simple. So each of you have many attentional capacities. Maybe the premise of this, what we're doing on a retreat, the premise is it's undeveloped. And we're here to wake it up, to develop it, to let it grow, and see what happens when our attention meets the present moment. The present moment is the food for attention to grow. And attention grows, sati grows, awareness grows, when it avails itself of the food of the present moment. But don't think that it's about the present moment. It's about the awareness that grows. So don't get too mesmerized by what your awareness is aware of. You want to be clearly aware, but you don't get so involved in fixing and changing and making a better present moment. It's more about the recognition, present moment. And then what do you experience? What do you sense? What do you feel? What comes in the label present moment? And then to sit back and observe it, if that seems like the right thing. The mind wanders off, and then you recognize again and go through that process. The wonderful things that Andrea talked about today. Relax, be curious, be kind, be receptive to your experience. So I hope that in giving this talk, that a little bit you are trying to feel into some of the things I was talking about, some of these capacities. That it kind of reminded you or connected you to your own attentional capacities. And that you stay interested in those and value them and treasure them, and maybe you'll in awe of them. Maybe you even have reverence for this practice, because this is really at the heart of who we are, is our ability to be aware. That's really the kind of the heart of it all. And you have a good heart. So may that heart serve you well and on this retreat, and continue with your practice, discovering what happens in the meeting of the present moment and your awareness of it. Thank you.